Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour, everybody. Happy Friday. It's always great to join you. Today is, of course, January 30th, 2015. Lots going on, lots to talk about, but I first of all thank you for being here so that we can play that infamous game of catch-up at the end of the week. Hope it's been a great week for all of you out there. If you're familiar with my program, if you're familiar with me, then you know that I'm a former, actually retired, senior special agent of the former Immigration and Naturalization Service. And ever since the terror attacks of 9/11, I have made it my own personal mission to do everything that I could possibly do to wake up our fellow Americans, wake up our leaders, so-called, about the true significance of our immigration laws and our borders. And indeed, our borders and our immigration laws are undoubtedly our first and last line of defense against international terrorists, transnational criminals, and all of the challenges and threats that we face. And, you know, we often hear that it's anti-immigrant to want the borders secured, the immigration laws enforced. That's one of the lies being told by the open borders anarchists. They try to convince people that this is about the right wing of you know, God knows where. I've always been registered as a Democrat. I've always voted as an independent. The story of immigration, the issue of immigration, isn't about left or right, but about right or wrong. So let's get some of that stuff out there so that everybody can understand what we're really dealing with. Pardon me. And in fact, the same laws that tell us who to keep out and who to kick out also tell us who to let in. Every year we admit roughly a million, perhaps sometimes more than a million, lawful immigrants under the laws that we want enforced. It is absurd to claim, it's just one of those fake claims, that if you want the laws enforced, you're against immigration. How in the world are you against immigration when I support the laws that enable roughly 1 million lawful immigrants, that's the law that they mean, and lawful, to come to the United States and be immediately placed on the pathway to citizenship? And if you look at the damage done by transnational criminals, people who run our borders or otherwise manage to gain entry into our country, almost invariably, the people at greatest risk are the members of the immigrant communities that parallel the places where these folks come from. It's not just about Latin America. It's the Russian mob, Asian organized crime, the Jamaican drug posses. Doesn't matter what country, the Israeli mob, you know, the Italian mob. Every race, every ethnicity, every country have people who are truly the good, the bad, and the ugly. And all we're trying to do here in the United States is make certain that the bad and the ugly stay out, and we'll take the good. And by ugly, I don't mean physical appearance. I mean the intentions that brings these people to our country. We want to keep out people who are terrorists, people who are criminals, and even people who would take the jobs that Americans desperately need. I mean, let's face it, Americans need to have that first shot at those jobs. We have never seen more poverty in America, and we've never seen a situation where the middle class is losing its grip on the middle class. And this isn't about xenophobia, and it's not about vilifying immigrants. It is about vilifying the politicians who don't stand with America and Americans. And that's what this program is about. I sometimes get into other issues, but principally my focus is national security, and especially where immigration is involved. And I write for a bunch of websites, and I want to put that out there for all of you, so get your crayons out. I'm a senior fellow with a terrific organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S. They are out in California, but I don't want anybody to misunderstand and think that they're only concerned about California. California has truly been the canary in the mine. If you look at what has happened to California with the violent gangs and all the other crazy stuff going on, what is happening there is happening because the politicians are putting political agenda and campaign contributions ahead of American citizens. This is not about compassion. When I hear this garbage coming out of Jeb Bush that it's an act of love to let in illegal aliens and to give people who snuck into the country lawful status and call that an act of love, then maybe he thinks going to a prostitute is an act of love also. This is about undermining national security and bringing in enough cheap labor that Americans don't have a chance for success in their own country, and the people being hammered the worst are America's minorities, the black community, the Latino community. They're getting hammered. So when we hear this nonsense that it's an act of love, it's a lie, that his nose is growing, and I think we need to start something that I would call the Pinocchio Club for lying politicians. And the only question then becomes, Pinocchio was a puppet, he was a marionette, so who's pulling the strings of people that say that it's appropriate to give millions of people opportunities, if you want to call it that, to violate our borders, violate our laws, and do harm to our country, and especially to our citizens. It's an act of national suicide. Suicide is not an act of love. And you will notice, if you're not familiar with my program, that I am crystal clear on where I stand on the issues. We need clarity. The language needs to be clear, and the concepts need to be clear. One of the reasons that the open borders advocates, I call them the immigration anarchists, don't like the word alien, is not because it's a word of racism or hatred. That's, again, one of the lies. They keep lying and lying and lying. It's like a con artist telling you that they're there to help you. They don't like the word alien because it provides clarity to the debate. And when you want to swindle people, the last thing you want is clarity. Magicians, pardon my frog this evening, folks, I can't seem to shake this darn thing. The one thing that magicians count on in order to fool the crowd, but there they're doing it for entertainment, is smoke and mirrors and fancy lighting and at least one or two young ladies who are extremely attractive running around in little skimpy outfits so that you don't know where to look first. It's about distraction and it's about subterfuge. Magicians do it for entertainment. Politicians do it because they're greedy. And we, the people, are paying the price. So this program is about dispelling that nonsense. I've been with Californians for Population Stabilization for a bunch of years. I'm very proud to be associated with them. And, you know, they hit all the issues. And I don't always agree with them on every single issue. But I will tell you that they are completely right on this issue of immigration and open borders and overpopulation of that state by people who legally don't have a right to be here. And that is where I come in. I provide my expertise acquired during the course of my 30-year career with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service so that people can come to understand from a position of truth and reality how our country is letting us down, how our country is undermining national security and public safety and public health. You know, we're hearing about the measles outbreak. Nobody's talking about the other possibility, or at least very few are talking about the possibility, that this isn't about parents who did not want to inoculate their kids for fear of autism, which may or may not be a legitimate fear. I tend to think that it's best to inoculate our kids, but I'm not an expert, and I'm not going to get into that. But really, nobody wants to talk about the other possibility, which is far more probable. Not that it was a lack of inoculation. That's not that new a phenomenon, and we didn't have this problem last year. Think about it. Last year, there was no measles outbreak, but just a few months ago, there was a massive influx of unaccompanied minors, so-called, from Central America. A couple of months ago, we saw the enterovirus, terrible virus, killed a number of American children and paralyzed others with symptoms very similar to polio. Now, isn't it remarkable that this is the first time we've had a significant measles outbreak? This isn't the first year that parents have refused to inoculate their children, but this is the year that we witnessed, or last year was the year that we witnessed, the influx of hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens, apparently aided and abetted by our wonderful friends to the south, Mexico, and they were scattered about our country by our own government that's supposed to protect us. This is a remarkable betrayal of our Constitution and of our laws and of public safety and of public trust. And the Republicans are nowhere to be found on the issues, by the way. And we're going to get into the Republicans and what they're not doing and how they're playing games just the same way the Democrats are. I've come to call both parties the Republicrat Party. And rather than the jackass and the elephant for their mascots, perhaps their mascot should be a panda, because all they do is pander to the people that write the checks. This is a form of corruption, plain and simple. Well, in addition to writing for Californians for Population Stabilization, and by the way, my last article for their website, and I hope you go to that website, capsweb.org, and check it out. My last article was simply called "For Americans to Do Well, For America to Do Well, Americans Must Do Well." I am sick of this narrative that for America to lead, we need to bring in brilliant people from around the world. I always thought that the best and brightest were referred to as Americans. And so when we hear the nonsense about how America must lead and the way to get America to lead is to displace American workers, go back to the words of Abraham Lincoln, who was truly a president of all the people. And he said that this was supposed to be a country of the people, by the people, and for the people, not the corporations and not the political contributors and the lobbyists. For America to do well, Americans must do well. I stand by those words, and I hope you do too. Additionally, I write for another organization, and I'm very proud to be a columnist for Front Page Magazine, published by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I was with them, in fact, as I've talked about previously, in Florida, West Palm Beach, where I was honored beyond words to be on a panel to discuss immigration with Senator Jeff Sessions, a man I wish would run for president, Congressman Louis Gohmert, another great American and great member of Congress. They're not all bums. There are some good people. Congressman John Fleming, another good guy. So I was there with them. There's a video on the Progressives for Immigration. I'm going sideways here. I have to read my own notes. There is an article on the Front Page Magazine website called Immigration Wars. If you look it up, you will see the video of the panel discussion that I participated in with those gentlemen. Great opportunity to speak with them and hear what they had to say. And I will tell you, it was refreshing to be with people who understand what it truly means to represent their own constituents, and not just their constituents, but all Americans across the country. Jeff Sessions, and he may not like this. I don't know if he will. But he reminds me of a 50s Democrat, kind of the cut of a John F. Kennedy or a Harry Truman. His concern, his heart is with American workers and their families. And he has often bucked the establishment of the Republican Party. He is an independent thinker. He's a true leader, and he's a moral guy. And the same could be said of Louis Gohmert. I was not familiar with John Fleming, to be honest with you, prior to this event. But I certainly loved what John Fleming had to say during that panel discussion. So please take the time. Go to Front Page Magazine, published by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. It's Front Page Mag. I have a bunch of my articles up there. Most recently, my most recent article for them was on this issue of sleeper cells and sleeper agents and the immigration component of the sleepers. And we're going to make that one of the key issues that we're going to talk about this evening, along with Loretta Lynch, hoping to become the next Attorney General. These are very important issues, very important issues. I also write for Progressives for Immigration Reform, and as their name implies, they lean way to the left. So here you have Front Page, which is a very conservative publication. And they are against liberalism, and they make it clear on the website. And I write for them as a columnist, and I just did a massive policy paper for Progressives for Immigration Reform. They're the polar opposites. And both sides, Progressives as well as Front Page, agree with me on the issue. Ladies and gentlemen, immigration is not, I'm going to keep on repeating this, immigration is not about left or right, but right or wrong. I don't know anybody who wants to sign a suicide pact. And the starting point for any discussion about immigration should be, in fact, must be the 9/11 Commission report and its findings. We're not seeing that today. And if you want to upset many of the members of Congress, both parties, just ask them, do you really think comprehensive reform would square with the advice that the 9/11 Commission gave us? And of course the answer is no. And finally, I write for another terrific organization. They put out a quarterly magazine called The Social Contract. They have just gone to press. The new edition should be out within the next couple of weeks, or maybe next week, hopefully. The Social Contract. You can find my articles on their website. So it's about providing the truth. And, you know, John Adams, way back when, said that facts are stubborn things. Facts are stubborn things. And, indeed, facts are stubborn things because you can't get around the facts. They might want to, but they can't. And this creates a real quandary for our politicians. How do they get away with messing around with us without letting us realize the damage they're doing? And so we have a situation. We had a senator, Tom Coburn, who had been the ranking Republican on the Homeland Security Committee in the United States Senate. Tom Coburn stepped down, but on his way out the door, he gave us a gift. And I mean this in all sincerity. And he asked for a report to be issued about the way that the money that had been spent to secure America for DHS, an agency that is so really screwed up, that I call it the Department of Homeland Surrender. And he said, I want to know exactly what the money did, what we've accomplished, where we need to go with this. And essentially what they found was that in 11 years, over $50 billion was squandered on Homeland Security, and it didn't achieve the goals. We still have 700 miles of open border. That was the findings. This isn't something I'm saying. This is what this report done by the U.S. government found. 700 miles of non-secure border. I mean, don't listen to the nonsense from the administration. We know that there's a problem of credibility. But, you know, the president during the State of the Union said that Yemen was doing great. And, of course, the very next day, the president was deposed in a military coup. And there's now bedlam reigning supreme in Yemen, which is a key place for al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations. This is a very dangerous situation. It's time we had some truth. It is time we had some truth about all of these issues. That's the purpose for my program, to get to the issues so that you understand what's really happening. The average American doesn't understand immigration, and I get that. You know, if I want advice about cancer, if I want advice about taxes, I go to an expert. I want to go to somebody who really knows what he's talking about. I've done 16 congressional hearings. I don't claim to have all the answers, by the way. Anybody who tells you that they have all the answers, you probably need to run for your life. But I do think that I bring to the table real-world experience that I hope is helpful to you. You know, I may have mentioned this on a previous program, but Neil Cavuto had me on his show a couple of years ago. I'm regularly on Neil's program. Most recently, though, I've been doing a lot of appearances with a real good guy, J.D. Hayworth. I got to throw out a salute to J.D. He was a former member of Congress from Arizona. In fact, I was with J.D. 6 weeks after 9/11 when I testified before the House Immigration Reform Caucus. J.D. Hayworth was one of the members of Congress in attendance. He has since left Congress. He is now a news anchor for Newsmax Television, Newsmax TV. His program airs for 3 hours every morning on Newsmax TV from 9 a.m. to 12 noon. He does a really great job. That's East Coast time, by the way. They broadcast out of Florida. And it seems as though at least 3 times a month or whatever, I'm on the program with him, and I really appreciate that opportunity to talk about immigration and related issues. And there are other folks at Newsmax. And then there's One American News Network. Yesterday, in fact, I was on with Rick Amata on his program on One American News Network. Because they're looking at the mainstream media and saying, you know what, the mainstream media is not telling the truth. They're not getting the information out there. And they are determined to do precisely that. But I can tell you that when I've been on certain programs, there's great consternation if you want to go off and have a discussion about something. When I'm on with, and by the way, don't misunderstand, that's not what I'm saying about Cavuto. Cavuto's a good guy. I like being on Neil's program. They also encourage me to call it the way I see it. But I've been on other programs where you start to try to explain your position, and boy, they get nervous. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. If you have an expert come on to talk about a topic, let that expert get his or her opinion out there. And if you want to have someone come on to refute it, then go ahead. But I can tell you, I did an appearance at CNN a couple of years ago, and boy, oh boy, they were ready to have a cow because of some things I was about to say. That's not news. That's not the way it's supposed to work. It doesn't mean that I'm right, but if you've invited me on, let's have an honest conversation. Let the chips fall where they may, and if you think I'm wrong, then get another expert in with a different opinion. If you go to trial and they have, you know, opposing experts, that's cool. But most of the networks, I mean, I won't even talk about MSNBC. I was on with them, gosh, maybe 100 times. And over the last 10 years, they have so shifted away from talking about the truth about immigration. Immigration is probably lied about more than any other issue because it is so powerful. That's something I want you to think about. You know, when I do my writings, I often say that immigration isn't a single issue, but a singular issue, because it does impact every challenge and threat we face. There's lots of money here, folks, and lots of potential for vulnerabilities. And when you put money up against vulnerabilities, the greedy SOBs are willing to take the risk and perhaps look at Americans who might die as a consequence of their betrayal as collateral damage. Oh, well, too bad. It's got to stop. And that's why this issue is so important and why the facts are so important. And I was on with Neil one day. And again, I do like how he does the program. I'm always happy to join him, and hopefully I'll be on before too very long again. But on this particular occasion, he was looking at the arrest statistics along the southern border, and Neil said to me, those numbers are down, so we have to presume there are fewer illegal aliens present here. And I said, well, first of all, Neil, it's not just the Mexican border. I mean, this is one of those subterfuges by our government. Once we secure that border, we're a country of 50 border states. And by the way, this issue came up during that panel discussion when I was down in Florida with the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Go to that video. I really want you to watch it and see what Congressman Louie Gohmert and Jeff Sessions had to say about that. They were so crystal clear. I mean, there was real clarity to what they had to say. We are 50 states, not four border states. So Neil asked me about the four border states basically by saying, well, if arrests are down, that means there are fewer illegal aliens here. And I always believe in a little bit of humor because it's a good way to get a point across where people will pay attention. And I said to Neil, you know, trying to figure out how many illegal aliens are present based purely on arrest statistics is quite a bit like taking attendance by asking people not present to raise their hand. I mean, stop and think about it. We don't know if the Border Patrol arrests 1 in 5, 1 in 8, 1 in 3. They have no idea. And we don't know if the ratio is constant or it varies. So how in the world can arrest statistics tell us what the true population is? And then you have an administration that cooks the books better than a barbecue. I mean, goodness, they must have, you know, Bernie Madoff doing their statistics for them, just like over at the Labor Department. 5.6% unemployment rate. Right. And let's ignore tens of millions of unemployed Americans. What does that statistic even mean but when you do that? It's a meaningless statistic that tries to paper over wood infested by termites. That's what it is. We're going to paint a rosy picture on this thing. You know, the family rushes to their family member's bedside. The doctor stops them in the hallway and says, I got good news and I got bad news. And they say, all right, what's the good news? Your loved one no longer has fever. And they're ecstatic. And then they say, what's the bad news? He's dead. The economy is dead. I mean, they can say what they want, but as Americans are losing their homes to foreclosure, don't tell me that we have a 5.6 unemployment rate. And then they love to tell you how many jobs were created last week. And what they very often don't say, although some people have been saying it lately on TV, which I'm glad about, is most of those jobs are either part-time jobs or minimum wage jobs or both. And they're not telling you about the high-paying jobs that were lost because, pardon me, foreign workers have replaced them. So all these numbers are nonsense. It's a poisonous brew that's cooked up by an administration that's being more deceptive than any administration that I could ever recall. That's what now passes for the truth. So we have a real serious situation where the truth is out the window, where we're hearing all kinds of nonsense. Neil got to that issue by asking me about the arrest statistics. And then, and this dovetails with that report that Senator Coburn asked for, Because Neil then said to me, well, at least they have the drones on the border. And I said, Neil, those drones are almost worthless. He said, what do you mean? He said, can't they shoot the aliens? He was kind of kidding around when he said it. I know Neil's not that sort of a guy, but he was being Neil, and he's kind of irrepressible, and he has a bit of a twisted sense of humor, as I do. I said, you know, and I both know, Neil, that those drones are not armed, and I wouldn't want them to be armed. I don't want to see our drones indiscriminately shooting at people, and neither does anybody else. That wouldn't be appropriate. But I said, what is the point to a drone? If a Border Patrol agent gets in trouble, the drone can't land and help him. If the Border Patrol agent needs help making arrests on the ground, the drone can't land and make arrests. But I said, if you put up a helicopter with agents on board, that chopper can land. If an agent is coming under fire, those agents can back up. The Border Patrol agents on the chopper can back up the agent or agents on the ground. The agents in the Border Patrol copter can help make arrests. They can land and assist. And Neil said, wow, I hadn't thought of that. I came home and I heard from some Border Patrol folks who told me that one of those drones costs more than a bunch of helicopters with agents on board. And guess what? The study that was done at the behest of Senator Tom Coburn made the same exact point, that they didn't believe there were any arrests or few arrests attributable to the drones, that the drones are basically worthless, and they're very costly. And then they even talked about how the DHS and the administration cooks the books and says, well, it only costs so much money to run one of those drones per hour, but ignores the salaries of all the people involved. I was told that it takes over a dozen people to control a drone, believe it or not, control them and maintain them and so forth. So if you want to talk about bang for the buck, it's not a drone. If you want to talk about being effective at stopping the flood of illegal aliens, it's not the drone. If you want to talk about officer safety, it's not the drone. And the study said that if they were smart, they would get rid of the drones and use only manned aircraft, helicopters and fixed-wing aircraft with agents on board. That came out of the study, exactly what I had said to Neil. And guess what? Our government is about to buy more drones. So it begs the question, why in the world would you want to pour money down a sinkhole that accomplishes nothing? And this is part of what I call the Magic Act. Politicians need to be able to go to their constituents and tell their constituents what the constituent wants to hear. So what do they tell their constituents? I just voted to spend, pick a number, $3 billion, whatever, for drones on the border. The average American hears about the drones, and you know what the average American says, folks? Wow, drones on the border, we're militarizing that border, and that's what we've needed all along. Military on the border, the drones are on the border, we're safer. It's a lie. This isn't about militarizing the border. It's about squandering the money so the politicians can make those claims that most people can't see through. And why are they doing it that way? Because the powers that be, people writing those campaign contributions, want that border wide open. So the problem that the politicians have is, how do we satisfy the constituents whose votes we need to get reelected while satisfying the people who are writing these gazillion-dollar checks? The drones are perfect. They can go to the constituents and talk about militarizing the border by using the drones. Everybody thinks about the drones that we're using in the Middle East, and they say, wow, they're militarizing the border. That member of Congress is voting for us. Good for him. I'm going to support his or her reelection campaign. Meanwhile, what happens? The flood of illegals continues. The flood of narcotics continues. The drones are ineffective, but they look good. It's camouflage for an open border. It gives the illusion of a secure border while making certain that the border is nothing more than a speed bump for the smugglers. That's the game that's being played on us. And unless you could see through the nonsense, it becomes very difficult to know what's real and what's not real. And we're seeing it in every aspect of our government today. You know, we always expected the government would do things for us, and that goes for the Republicans too. And I know when they hear, oh, don't I want the government doing anything for me? Well, the government does have missions to do for us that even my most conservative friends would have to agree with. Let's start, for example, with national security. that's not something you want to privatize. And I really have a problem with privatizing so much of the stuff that these folks think is a panacea. You know, you want GM executives running our government, or maybe the folks from AIG or Tyco or God knows where, Enron. You know, there's no magic to privatize. There's no magic to the corporate world. It's just so remarkable to me that when I'm with a bunch of conservatives, they always tell me how great corporations are. And I always think about GE and Enron and Tyco and AIG, and I get kind of ill. It's about people. It's about people. And the U.S. government has always been pretty darn good. Yeah, I mean, there's always been deficiencies, but you show me a government or a country that's been better than ours. But we now have people in our government who are deconstructionalists, and I believe it starts with the White House on down, who want to take us down a peg. And you know, here's the problem. It's not like if we don't retain the number one top dog position in the world that it'll be the Brits or the Canadians that will fill the void. I could live with that. I could deal with that. No, if we falter, waiting in the wings, Iran, Russia, China, what could possibly go wrong? There is no award here for second place. In fact, there's no survival for second place. This is a battle for survival of our way of life and, in fact, of our lives. There are people around the world literally and figuratively sharpening their knives. And just because the president doesn't want to acknowledge that a terrorist organization has us in their sights, and when they get into this game of whether or not the Taliban is a violent insurgent organization or a terrorist organization, and we can cut a deal with the Taliban because the Taliban really aren't terrorists, and we don't deal with terrorists, but since they're not terrorists... I mean, the crazy stuff that we're hearing with language boggles the mind. It could almost be a comedy. I could almost imagine the late, great George Carlin playing with these words terrorists and insurgent and so forth. He was a master at that sort of thing. But this isn't a joke. This is super-duper serious. I mean, it doesn't get any more serious than this. Now, let's look at this issue of the sleepers, the article that I wrote for Front Page Magazine. I've been getting an awful lot of feedback about the article. And in fact, it was the topic of a conversation that I had on J.D. Hayworth's program last week, and Pete Hoekstra, former congressman also, and in fact, he used to chair the Intelligence Committee in the House of Representatives. He was on the program with J.D. this time, the first time I've had the opportunity to speak to Pete Hoekstra. And the discussion turned to my article. And, in fact, what's cool about Newsmax, there's some props headed their way. I wrote this article for Front Page Magazine about the sleeper cells. I sent out an email blast, and if you go to my website, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, you can see all my articles up there, michaelcutler.net. And so I sent it out, and it didn't take 8 minutes. I got an email back from J.D.'s producer saying, hey, Mike, can you come on the program? We want to talk about this. And so I was asked about it because what I talked about in part was that one of the things the politicians are doing, just like they're doing with the measles business that I talked about a little while ago, they were talking about how, oh, the measles outbreak is the fault of American families that are so selfish that they're not inoculating their children because they're worried about autism. Selfish? Trying to do the best for your children? Selfish? You know, you want to unscrew people's heads and throw them in the garbage can like a basketball. It's remarkable. Selfish. Astonishing, isn't it? And we know that it's apparently not because of that. I mean, maybe it contributes. I'm not an epidemiologist, and I don't play one on TV, and I won't pretend to be one. But to me, the coincidence is very disturbing. And in law enforcement, we always look very much askance at a coincidence. Because you have to put it in context. We had the enterovirus following shortly after that huge tsunami of unaccompanied minors. Now, isn't it remarkable that we had the enterovirus followed by the measles, and this hasn't happened before this way? So you have to ask yourself, what was the common denominator? What was the root cause? And it would certainly appear that the root cause to all of this may well have been the folks coming across the border. Let's remember that... Ellis Island was a quarantine station. So it's always about shifting the blame away from the borders, shifting the blame away from aliens who might come to the United States and do serious harm to us. We can't have that conversation because that goes against the narrative that folks like Gates and Zuckerberg and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce are pushing hand over fist. They want those open borders. They want the cheap labor. They want the tourists to come here from other countries. They want the students to come here from other countries so that we can fill all the classrooms and fill every seat in the airline, fill every seat in Yankee Stadium and all the other stadiums around the country and Broadway and restaurants. And it's about money. And I get that, and I have no problem with people making money. That's what makes things happen. But money, where it costs American lives and the American way of life and weakens our national security, I'll tell you, there's a word in my vernacular for that, and it's called treasonous. Treasonous. And you can't solve a problem till you're willing to identify and recognize it exists. The first step in problem solving is identify the problem and be honest about it. Be honest about it. You know, if a patient has cancer and says, oh, this is too terrible to contemplate, I'm going to go on a cruise and make believe I didn't have that conversation with my doctor, you may get away with it for a few months until you croak. I had cancer 14 years ago, and I immediately, it was life-altering. I will tell you, anybody who has suffered cancer will tell you it's a life-altering diagnosis because suddenly all of your other priorities evaporate. There is no other priority. When you are told you have a potentially fatal disease, you immediately make that the focus of all of your efforts. Get the best doctors, find out what the best treatments are, and get moving because the clock is ticking and time isn't on your side. There's a time bomb going off in your body when you have cancer. America has cancer, folks. It's the threat of terrorism. It's transnational criminals. It's the narcotics trade. And if you want to know if the borders are secure, by the way, forget about those BS arrest statistics being fabricated by this administration that wouldn't know the truth if it bit them on the nose. It's the price and availability of heroin and cocaine. And heroin has never been cheaper because it's flowing across the border and there's epidemics across the country. I was on a radio program last week with my good friend Gary Sutton over in Yorks, Pennsylvania. And the WSBA is his radio station to put out a free plug for him. He does a great job. I've known him for many years. I met him when I first started working with then-Mayor Lou Barletta. And it was just so interesting because I came on the program to talk about this very same article about the sleepers. And the commercial just before I came on was that the following day they were going to have a seminar for the people in that town of York, Pennsylvania, to deal with the heroin epidemic. The heroin epidemic in York, Pennsylvania. This is across the country. This is what happens when you don't secure borders. You know, we're spending $3.3 billion a year to conduct inspections at ports of entry, and then you have our politicians saying it doesn't matter how you come here. And that includes Boehner. It includes Jeb Bush. I mean, come on, folks. Let's get serious. And that's why the politicians will say to you, oh, the president with his executive orders is undermining the Constitution and the rule of law. Well, he is, I think. But you know what they're never going to say to you? What he's doing is undermining national security. Because if you say that, then people will say, then why do you want to have some kind of a massive act to provide millions of illegal aliens with lawful status? So they've got to be able to beat up on the president. That's just politics, folks. But they can't do it in a way where they can't then turn around and say, but you know what? This business of comprehensive reform, we need to do it. They can get away with that nonsense because they figured out a way they think where they can be in two places at one time and thread the needle and say, well, this is a violation of rule of law. So the real true believers of the conservative side of America says, oh, my God, the Constitution, rule of law, oh, no. But many people don't give a damn about the rule of law. I'm going to prove to you that many people don't give a damn about the rule of law. How many of you or how many of your friends or neighbors have radar detectors? Why do you have a radar detector, if you do? It's so that you can go above the speed limit and know when you need to slow down when there's radar presence so that the police don't stop you. Are you going to tell me that somebody who has a radar detector gives a rat's tail about the rule of law? Of course not. When people cheat on exams and just say, well, cheating is okay, just don't get caught. Do you think they believe in the rule of law? The rule of law, like it or not, is not a big deal for all too many of our fellow Americans. it's a good thing to criticize the president about and throw in the Constitution for good measure, but we don't want to be too strong about this where the people will say, wait a minute, it doesn't make any sense to give millions of people identity documents. We don't even know who the hell they are. The Republicans are no different. They want to do what the president wants to do, except they don't want to give these people citizenship, but they want to give them lawful status so that they can work. And that way, they can satisfy the people writing the checks that want the cheap labor. And so what if Americans lose their jobs? So what if Americans lose their homes? So what? So what if American children have student loans that look like mortgage payments and no jobs to go to? So what? The politicians are getting their campaign contributions, which are little more than legalized bribes. Think about this. If a cop stops you for speeding and you offer that officer $50, you may get arrested. But if you can go to the mayor of that town and give that mayor enough money, they'll raise the speed limit. That's called a political campaign contribution and business as usual, and nobody goes to jail. But if you bribe a police officer who took an oath very similar to a politician, you're probably going to go to jail. Remarkable. Remarkable. So here is where we are with all this going on. You have an administration that's playing games with national security, violating the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, and precious few Republicans calling them out for violating principles that are taking away our national security. And so we get back to this narrative about the sleepers. So we have the same problem with the sleepers. Because if we start to talk about sleeper agents in honest terms, it would immediately call into question immigration and border security. Because a sleeper agent, generally speaking, is a foreign national who one way or the other manages to enter the United States, either with a visa, by running the border, stowing away on a ship, doesn't matter, getting here is getting here is getting here. And once they're in the United States, their job is to keep a low profile. That's what they call them, sleepers. You don't see them, you don't hear them until the alarm clock rings. And what's the alarm clock? They get a phone call. They get a tap on the shoulder. They get a message somehow, email, whatever, telling them tomorrow is the day. Tomorrow we strike. So for the last 3 years, 4 years, they go to their job. They're quiet. They're peaceful. They don't say anything to anybody. They probably smile at their neighbors. Meanwhile, if you could read their minds, they're probably thinking, I wish you were dead, I wish you were dead, I'm going to, you know. But meanwhile, they smile, and people are stupid. And they say, oh, he smiled at me, he pet my dog, he mows his lawn, he doesn't allow crabgrass to get on the, he's a good guy. No, he's not. But that's what a sleeper is. So they've got to find a way to get people to stop realizing that we're talking about aliens. So how do they do it? They use a two-word phrase, homegrown. Homegrown. Homegrown terrorists. Homegrown sleepers. Homegrown sleepers. So as I was researching this article, and in fact I did a hearing back on March 10th, 2005, before the House Immigration Subcommittee about immigration, and I talked about sleeper agents. And I talked about how Robert Mueller, who at the time had been the head of the FBI just a couple of weeks earlier, had testified before it was either the House or the Senate Intelligence Committee, warning about his concerns about al-Qaeda sleeper cells in the United States. They were very hard to find because they were sleepers. They were dormant. They were keeping a low profile. They were invisible. It's like looking for the invisible man. Lots of luck. So now they're using the term homegrown. We had Ray Kelly, who had been the commissioner of the New York City Police Department. He had been the commissioner for U.S. Customs. He was sent over to help Haiti when they had their problems. This great law enforcement guy, this bastion of brilliance for the most sophisticated police department in the world, the NYPD. Headline, New York Post. This was the time of Faisal Shahzad about 5 years ago, the guy that was going to set off that SUV in Times Square and kill a bunch of tourists. The crossroads of the world. Do you know how Ray Kelly described Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber? Fasten your seatbelts, folks. Real tight. Here we go. He called Faisal Shahzad a classic example of a homegrown terrorist. I kid you not. Faisal Shahzad came here roughly at the age of 20 from Pakistan with a student visa, subsequently became a U.S. citizen before trying to blow up that van in the middle of Times Square when pedestrians were all over the place. homegrown? Can someone explain to me how somebody who comes to the United States at age 20 is homegrown? In what home are we talking about? The home of Pakistan? It's lie after lie, and we're hearing it from our law enforcement officials. We're hearing it from the politicians. We're hearing about the lone wolves. Let me give you an accounting for these sleepers who weren't homegrown. Mir Amil Kansi, you may not remember his name. It's not very catchy. But he came here from Pakistan, and in 1993, he was an applicant for political asylum. I'm still trying to find out if he ever got asylum, but it doesn't much matter. He's dead now, and the way he was killed, we will get to right now. Bought himself into a partnership of a courier service, driving a van, a courier van. Courier vans, taxi cabs, ice cream trucks, and school buses are great camouflage for a sleeper. They are ubiquitous. We see them everywhere. If you drive a yellow cab in Midtown Manhattan, it's kind of like living in a treehouse in a dense forest. Think how many yellow cabs there are. Think how many courier vehicles there are all over the country. So he gets into this partnership for a courier vehicle, and he's in Virginia, and every day he drives by the Central Intelligence Agency in Langley. Every day he keeps an eye on which way does the traffic come in, and what time do the employees get there, and what's the best, because he's doing surveillance from this van that he bought into as a supposed courier. In January 1993, he gets out of his van, and in his hand is an AK-47, opens fire on cars pulling into the compound at CIA headquarters, kills two, wounds three, and splits, heads out of the country. People from other countries who commit crimes and acts of terror in the United States have a trapdoor through which they can escape. The trapdoor, the ability to go back to their home country. This guy, what does he do? Hits and runs. Kills, jumps in the vehicle. He's in the wind. Our guys tracked him down, dragged him back here, put him on trial, found him guilty. He was executed. The people he killed remain dead. The people he wounded remain injured. He was a classic example of a sleeper. You can call him what you want. And I don't know if he decided to do this on his own or he got a phone call, but it doesn't matter. It would certainly appear that he came here with the intention of doing harm to us. This didn't happen overnight. He wasn't in a road rage incident and he decided to run somebody over because he was angry. That certainly wouldn't be a sleeper. To buy into a courier service, to use that van apparently to conduct surveillance of a target that he was going to hit. There was a lot of forethought and a lot of planning that went into it. Whether he was a self-motivated sleeper or a sleeper operating under the directions of somebody outside the country is irrelevant. He was a foreign national sleeper. You then had a month later, I believe it was the 26th of February, 1993, first bombing at the World Trade Center. Every single participant came to the United States from the Middle East, primarily Pakistan. They committed visa fraud. One guy applies for political asylum. Again, Ramzi Youssef is granted political asylum, obviously lied through his teeth. Another guy, Mahmoud Abu Alima, got agricultural amnesty because he claimed to have been picking beans in Florida, so that the provision that was part of the Reagan amnesty, it's both sides of the aisle, that disastrous amnesty, and it was Chuck Schumer, Chucky Boy, who gave us that agricultural provision of the amnesty. And when I tried to meet with Chuck, I did have a couple of brief meetings with him. He was my congressman. I have to tell you, never my representative. And I said, why in the world are you concerned about agricultural workers? You don't have any farms in your district. He kind of laughed me off and basically sent me on my way, wouldn't want to have any further discussion. So Mahmoud Abu Alima gets agricultural amnesty, claiming he worked in a farm in Florida picking beans, never worked in a farm. The closest he got to planting anything was when he planted a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center. Six dead, over 1,000 injured, $500 million in damage inflicted, and the tower almost came down sideways. And let me tell you, folks, if that thing had gone down sideways, I don't even want to imagine what the casualty count would have been. It certainly would have far and away eclipsed 9/11. They were sleepers. They came here obviously intent on carrying out a terrorist attack. And they bided their time and went about their preparations by keeping a low profile. That is a sleeper, and they weren't homegrown. Faisal Shahzad, not homegrown. Let's even look at the 9/11 terrorists. They all came here from other countries, all of them obviously part of this plan to attack America. And they didn't come here on September the 10th, as I told Steve King, the congressman, when I testified before the House Immigration Subcommittee about a decade ago. They didn't come here, or maybe 6 years ago. I think it was probably the field hearing in Dubuque, Iowa. Nearly 10 years ago, I guess. Time flies. This was an attack that they had planned on before they got here. They weren't homegrown. They were sleepers. And they didn't come here the day before the attacks. Some of them had been here almost a year. That's what a sleeper is. They come here and they immediately embed themselves. That's not my word. That's the word that comes out of the 9/11 Commission report. The Boston Marathon bombers. Now, maybe they didn't come here with the intention of carrying out a terrorist attack, but they came here as students. They applied for political asylum, claiming they could never go back to Russia, that they would face persecution or worse. They articulated what's known as credible fear. And guess what? As soon as we gave them lawful status, they hopped on airplanes and went back to Russia. Do you think maybe it proves they lied? And ultimately, they carry out a terrorist attack. Foreign nationals, not homegrown. So we hear this nonsense, oh, the homegrown lone wolf. Yes, we do have some certifiable wackaloons. They're disenfranchised. They're upset. They're sociopaths. They're psychopaths. They like to perpetrate violence, and they want to find the so-called legitimate justification to kill. So they decide that they're going to act like a terrorist or maybe even act in concert with terrorists. Who knows? That piece of trash who took a hatchet to the New York City police officers who was born in the United States. You want to call him homegrown? Yeah, okay, we can do that. But he wasn't a sleeper. He was a whack. That all these fancy words and all of these little twists and turns of language and reason are motivated. This isn't happening by accident. And the motivation is to get people to forget the true importance of our borders and our immigration laws. That's what this is about. Whether it's the measles outbreak, whether it's this issue about whether or not people are homegrown or not, it's all about getting people to forget about the critical role that immigration plays in national security. That's what we're looking at here, folks. And then we get to Loretta Lynch, who wants to be the next attorney general. And she's at the confirmation hearings. And they ask Ms. Lynch, you know, do you think that people who are here illegally should be entitled to citizenship? And she said, oh, no, if you're here illegally, not citizenship, but it's okay for them to work. And you could almost fall over. And she said, no matter how they got here, I want to see these people able to work. There is a law under Section 274A of the Immigration and Nationality Act that we amended back with the Reagan amnesty that said if you intentionally hire illegal aliens, you're committing a violation of law. And if you're flagrant about it, and unrepentant, and we can't get you to stop, you can wind up going to jail. Well, the attorney general is the top cop. So what nobody seemed to have asked, or at least not to my knowledge, is, well, wait a minute, Ms. Lynch. You believe that illegal aliens are entitled to work? So does that mean that when people hire them, they shouldn't be punished? Nobody asked her. I'd like to ask her that question. And so she made light of how they come here. Well, no matter how they came here, they're entitled to work. So why do we have an inspections process? I'd like to know where she stands on sanctuary cities, because those sanctuary cities are committing a violation of law, aiding, abetting, encouraging, inducing, harboring, shielding, all part of the smuggling statute. To my knowledge, she wasn't asked about that. And then she went to lunch and came back after lunch, and our friend Chuck Schumer asked her if she thought illegal aliens should work. And suddenly, apparently, she gained religion and said, oh, of course not. Of all people, Chuck Schumer. Oh, my God. Can you believe that? Chuck Schumer was the guy who went before TV cameras. Hard to imagine that also. And what did Chuck Schumer talk about when he went before the cameras? He talked about how he was furious that people were trespassing on the Brooklyn Bridge and on the Manhattan Bridge and the World Trade Center. And he said, trespassing is dangerous. And the reason that people trespass is because the penalties aren't strong enough to deter them. Because in New York, if you trespass on those landmarks, the max is a year in jail. These people are only getting about 3 months in jail. And he actually took the position that if you trespass on a landmark in New York City, you should be looking at 5 years in jail. So the guy that climbs the cables on the Brooklyn Bridge, take an artsy picture of the skyline or the Statue of Liberty, Schumer would put that kid away in a prison for 5 years. But if you trespass on America, he wants to give you citizenship. It's remarkable. Earlier today, I spoke with a good friend of mine, the editor of The Social Contract, my friend Wayne. And he said, Mike, have you seen the latest bulletin from the FBI's most wanted list, most wanted terrorist list? I said, no, I didn't, because, you know, a lot of my friends try to help me out. With everything going on, I sometimes feel like I'm trying to drink from a fire hydrant. I mean, it just comes at you at 100 miles an hour from 10 different directions. Now, you tell me if this is a homegrown terrorist, boys and girls. The guy's name is Liban Haji Mohammed. Liban Haji Mohammed entered the United States from Somalia. Let me read this to you. You tell me what you think. This is from the FBI. Liban Haji Mohammed, a naturalized U.S. citizen born in Somalia, has been named to the FBI's list of most wanted terrorists, and a reward of up to $50,000 is being offered for information leading to his arrest and conviction. Boy, he's a success story, isn't he? He's made it to the FBI's list of most wanted terrorists. Wow. And they go on and say this. Mohammed is charged with providing material support and resources to Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab, a Somali-based terrorist organization. Quote, Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for many bombings in Somalia and Uganda and the 2013 attack on the Westgate Mall in Nairobi, Kenya, said Carl Gattas, special agent in charge of the counterterrorism division at the FBI's Washington field office. Liban Mohammed is believed to have left the U.S. with the intent to join Al-Shabaab in East Africa. We believe he is currently there operating on behalf of that terrorist organization. Traveling with his U.S. passport, Mohammed is thought to have left the United States on or about July 5, 2012. Before his departure, the 29-year-old lived in Northern Virginia suburbs of Washington, D.C., where he worked as a cab driver. Think about that. What have I said about driving vehicles? While living in Northern Virginia, Mohammed was a recruiter and a radicalizer for Al-Shabaab, which historically has targeted Westerners to go to Somalia and fight for them, Gata said. Not only did Mohammed choose to go to Somalia and fight with Al-Shabaab, he took a prominent role in trying to recruit people and have them trained with weapons, driving a cab in the United States. You see? This isn't about bigotry. This isn't about xenophobia. This is about reality. Reality. A taxi cab gives the driver mobility and camouflage. You know, I can tell you from experience as an agent, and I have followed many people and done surveillance. The guy you're looking at gets up at 8 o'clock in the morning. He hops in his car and he zips down the highway and heads to a mall, heads to a parking lot, heads somewhere, and we follow him. Maybe we even have helicopters in the air if he's an important enough target. And we're tracking this guy. Gets to a parking lot, gets out of the car, walks up to somebody else in another car, or maybe he walks into a restaurant, or maybe he walks into a mall, and suddenly you see him walking next to somebody or sitting next to somebody in a restaurant. Guess what? This guy is having a meeting, and now we need to know who that other person is, because that other person is apparently an associate. We've even seen people go to a restaurant and switch cars. Sometimes that would happen in a drug deal. Identical cars, they switch car keys, they get into the cars, and they leave. In one car is money, and the other car is dope. We've seen that done. You'd be amazed at the stuff that goes on if you do surveillance. But a guy that drives a cab or a transport van or a limousine or an ice cream truck or a school bus, he's in there meeting and talking to people. Is it a passenger? Is it a meeting that he's having? There's no way of knowing. There's just no way of knowing. The passenger gets in the back of the cab. He's driven for 15 minutes and gets out. He may have just been a passenger. Maybe they exchange those little memory sticks that you can use with your computer. Maybe they passed each other a piece of paper. whatever. You don't know if there was a meeting. A taxi cab is the ideal situation for a bad guy wanting to do harm to us. And we have all these states around the country saying, oh, we're going to give illegal aliens driver's licenses. The driver's license gives the person credibility. It's an ID document. It's a whole bunch of things. But it also provides the opportunity for that person with that driver's license to have clandestine meetings where it will be impossible for a surveillance team to know what's going on. Our country has become its own worst enemy. This isn't xenophobia, and it's not prejudice. It's about being concerned about what we are doing to protect ourselves. And if terrorist attacks start happening as a matter of routine, it'll be very hard to stop the music once it starts. We have millions of people from around the world, from every country on the planet, living in towns and cities across America. I was just watching an ad for the U.S. Navy, and I'm a very big fan of the military. Very big fan. And, you know, one of the things that I'm very proud to do is I'm part of a speakers bureau in Washington, D.C. I've been affiliated for more than a decade with the Alan L. Freed Associates. It's a speakers bureau. They hold seminars primarily for the military, the intelligence services, occasionally law enforcement, or high-level corporate executives. And I am the guy they call upon, I guess you would figure this one out, to talk about immigration-related issues. And I remember one day I was in front of a bunch of Air Force officers, generals, colonels, and so forth, and I decided to stir the pot a little bit because I always like to make things interesting, and this was after lunch, and lots of people looked a little bit drowsy because the food at the Capitol Hill Club where we held the seminar is really excellent. They have a five-star chef there. And they looked a little lethargic, and I got to the front of the room. They introduced me, and I said, I'm a big fan of the military, but why in the world do we still have a military? And I suddenly had a room filled with these Air Force officers who were doing their best impersonation of Jack Nicholson at the court-martial and A Few Good Men. They were angry, and I understood their anger. And I said, but here's my point. Is it not true that the primary mission of all of our armed forces, every branch, is to keep America's enemies as far from us as possible? And suddenly their anger turned to agreement. And they said, you're right. And they said, well, how in the world do you carry out your primary function of keeping our enemy as far from our shores as possible when we have all these millions of foreign nationals living throughout America with no way of knowing who they are or why they're here? And I got a round of applause. And they were very angry about the situation and said, you know, you're right. We hadn't thought of immigration quite in those terms. The Navy ad that I just saw, and it was a very effective ad, the announcer said, our enemies will have to go through us to get to you. But what if they're already here, folks? You see, I honor our military. I think we treat those folks terribly when they come home after they've gone in harm's way for us. And not only does our government not treat them well enough, by a long shot they don't treat them well enough, it's people like Gates and Zuckerberg. I'm going to tell you a quick story that will probably infuriate you, and it should infuriate you, because it makes me want to urinate blood. Zuckerberg, a year ago, in November, held something called a hackathon. I thought it was a very apt name for this piece of garbage program that he ran. A hackathon, well, a hacker is somebody who breaks into a data network, into a computer network, illegally. The hackathon was this program that he concocted with some of his other buddies on Silicon Valley, and they would teach young people how to write lines of computer code, do programming, which is a wonderful opportunity. And he personally was there to mentor these kids and teach them, and boy, he knows what he's doing, and great profession. Oh, by the way, the prerequisite to be part of this hackathon deal, two things. You had to agree to use your newfound skills to lobby every politician in America about the need for comprehensive immigration reform, and to participate, you yourself had to be an illegal alien. Yeah, you heard me right. If you wanted Mr. Zuckerberg's personal tutelage, the requirement was you needed to be an illegal alien, unlawfully present in the United States. I got into an argument with a computer nerd at the green room at Fox News not that long ago. And we got into this discussion, and he argued with me and said, oh, no, no, you didn't have to be illegal. You just could not possibly be an American, and that's fine. And my head was swimming. I said, first of all, you can go to the newspaper articles, and it was very specific about being illegal. But why would you provide for foreign nationals that which you wouldn't provide for your own citizens? Why wouldn't you want to help children living in poverty? And you know the accusations we always hear about bigotry? I will tell you exactly what this piece of trash said to me. He said to me, do you think those people can be taught to write computer code? And I was furious, and I said, what do you mean by those people? Define those people. And he wouldn't. I said, are you speaking about people of a socioeconomic group, of a racial group? What is those people? I said, do you think because you're poor, you're stupid? And he just kept smirking at me and says, well, I don't have any Americans work for me. Everybody who works for me is from another country. I hate hiring Americans. I said, where were you born? He said, well, I had no control over being born here, but I don't hire Americans. And by the way, do you know that there's no law against that? As long as he doesn't hire illegal aliens, and the way this administration conducts business, I'm sure that they wouldn't do anything to him anyway. And I said to him, so you don't want to hire children living in poverty and help them to bootstrap themselves out of rat-infested tenements? How wonderful you are. Why wouldn't you do this to help returning soldiers who maybe lost limbs defending your sorry rear end? Because I said, I'll be honest, looking at you, I don't think you could defend yourself against a mosquito. And again, I got that little smirk, and he said, why should I? And the only thing I was able to do at this point was to just get up and walk out of the green room, and he said, well, I hope I didn't mess up your appearance, because I know you're going on before I am. I mean, it was remarkable. And he was there with this very nice young lady. I did my appearance with Neil, and he did not bother me at all. This was when I was on with Neil Cavuto. And as I walked out, the young lady that was with him on the program, because they were there to talk about computers, said, Mr. Cutler, it was a pleasure to meet you. And I shook her hand. And meanwhile, he was hiding behind one of the security guards. He saw me come out of the studio and literally ran to get out of my way. And I said, you know, you got to be careful who you associate yourself with, because sometimes the stench rubs off. This is what we're up against, folks. We have self-hating Americans who wield an awful lot of power because they have the money and they're immoral. You have Bill Gates running around, and Gates is leading the charge for comprehensive immigration reform, even as they're laying off people in Silicon Valley. And Jeff Sessions, during that wonderful event that the David Horowitz Freedom Center held, made that point. He said, why in the world do we want to bring in hundreds of thousands of high-tech workers when Silicon Valley just laid off 18,000? I wish somebody would ask Ted Cruz that question, by the way. Mr. Cruz wants a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas. And if you don't believe me, go to capsweb.org, go to michaelcutler.net, go to Front Page Magazine, go to any one of those websites I've mentioned. Because you can see a video of Mr. Cruz at a Senate hearing about S-744 last year. That was the Senate immigration bill. And he said, one of the biggest things wrong with this bill is it doesn't allow enough of these brilliant high-tech workers from all over the world to come here. We need to bring in hundreds of thousands of these people. Hundreds of thousands? And what are American programmers supposed to do? Work in Burger King? Understand the problem we're facing, folks. You see, this push for open borders is destroying America. It's destroying the middle class. And the major news networks won't talk about it because they're right there with them. They're right there with them, whether they have a second channel that's a second language channel, so they know that if they can get more people who speak that second language to come to America and turn on their program so they can charge more for advertising, they're not thinking about the next terror attack. They're not thinking about what happens if America falls. All they're thinking about is how much money they can shovel in their bank accounts. As they say, nothing personal, just business. We're hearing about this concept of wage equality, and everyone thinks it's great. Wage equality. And they talk about class warfare, and they're talking about how the president made fun of Mitt Romney because of wage equality. You know what nobody's asking? And I've written about it, because if you go to read what Alan Greenspan had to see when he testified, what he had to say when he testified for Chuck Schumer, this is not about raising middle class wages to narrow the gap between the middle class and the wealthy. Oh no, 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 boys and girls, this is about driving down middle class wages so that we narrow the gap between American middle class, highly skilled and highly educated Americans and Americans with no skills and no education, in other words, the poor. This is about the destruction of the middle class. And I wrote about this for all those websites. Every one of the websites I've mentioned, if you go to them, capsweb.org, and please go to them. And if you go to those websites, capsweb.org, front page mag, PFIR. So you got to punch into Google, you'll find it, Progressives for Immigration Reform, PFIR, Progressives for Immigration Reform, The Social Contract. Please forward the materials to everybody you know. Please ask those people to forward it to everybody they know, because I call this my bucket brigade of truth. Because everyone is talking about wage equality, wage equality. It's unfair. The middle class is falling. Wage equality is what this is about, folks. What they want to do is make more equal the failed salaries of the middle class and the poor. In fact, Greenspan said that the highly skilled American workers were being paid a wage premium, because they are not being made to compete with foreign workers. They're being shielded from competition with foreign workers. Our borders and our immigration laws are supposed to shield Americans from foreign workers, from criminals, from terrorists, from dangerous diseases. That's why we have borders and immigration laws. And here you have Alan Greenspan laying it out crystal clear, April the 30th, 2009, at a hearing before Chuck the Schmuck Schumer. And what was he saying? We need to stop shielding American workers from foreign competition. He actually referred to middle class, high tech, highly educated workers as a privileged elite earning a wage premium that they're not entitled to if they would be made to be competing with people from other countries. And he said the goal should be to greatly reduce wage inequality. Which inequality are we talking about? Not between the middle class and the poor, but between the middle class and the wealthy, rather, but between the middle class and the poor. So for him and for Chuck and all these other bums, their idea of wage equality is to narrow the gap between middle-class, highly educated, highly skilled workers and Americans flipping hamburgers at McDonald's. That's what it's about. And I am telling you, the statement is crystal clear when you read his testimony. This is about the destruction of the middle class, and they're doing it by the subterfuge of wage equality. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, I came up with a thought, and I want to share this with you, and take it for a test spin, see what you think about it, and you can reach me at my website, because I'd love to hear from you, michaelcutler.net. But here is my thought that I'd love to know. I'd love to know what you think. People tend to hold people in positions of authority in awe. There was an interesting program on TV that I saw the other day, and I don't recall if it was Brain Games or one of those Discovery Channel programs, but I always like to watch it. It's always thought-provoking, and it's good to provoke thought. They had a guy dress up like a security guard for a bank, you know, with a gun and a badge and the whole bit, and he stood outside the bank next to the night deposit drop. And people were coming in with their bags to drop money in at night when the bank is closed. These are their proceeds from the day at their stores or wherever it was they worked for their businesses. And the guy in the uniform said to each person as they got there, and they filmed the whole thing on tape, he said, oh, that security drop doesn't work. Just put it in my strong box. And he's standing there with this contraption with a strong box on top. And they kind of looked at him and said, are you sure? And he said, oh, yeah, that thing isn't working. The bank has me standing out here. And one person after another put the money into a strong box. But before they walked away, they stopped them and called them back. And they said to them, why'd you do that? And one woman said, well, you told me that the thing wasn't working. He said, I'm going to imagine there's a lot of money in that bag. She said, oh, yeah, it's a full day's proceeds for my business. And he said, and you just gave it to me? She said, well, you said you worked for the bank. And all the guy was doing was standing there in a uniform. And she readily put the money in there. And it was person after person after person. They kind of looked. They said, are you sure? They kind of hesitated, and then they put the money in the thing. Problem in this country, folks, with people not questioning, people following blindly anybody who seems to be an authority figure. We're doing it with our politicians. And I have a partial solution. We need to change our mindset. When I was in Florida, it was very interesting. I met Congressman Louie Gohmert, and I'm very impressed with the guy. I'm impressed with another Louie in Congress, except he doesn't call himself Louie. He calls himself Lou, and that's my good friend Lou Barletta. And these guys are adamant about not being called congressmen. They insist on being called simply by their first name. And they're not being, you know, this isn't a political trick for them. I know these guys, and Lou Barletta is a personal friend. And when I met Louie Gohmert, I said to him, I said, Congressman, should I call you by your first name? He said, you have to, Mr. Cutler. And I thought it was kind of remarkable that he's calling me mister. And he said, you know, I used to be a judge. And when I was a judge, I insisted on being called judge, not because I'm high and mighty and looking for status, but simply because as a judge, very often, the people of my community came before me. And he said, so you need to keep everybody at arm's length if you're going to be totally objective. You can't be objective when you're hanging out with people one day and then they come before you in your courtroom the next day. That creates a problem. So he said, you have to keep them at arm's length. He said, I'm no longer a judge. He said, I'm actually happier this way because now I'm back among the people. He said, all I am is another American citizen, except it's my voice that gets heard in Washington on behalf of the people that I live with in my town. So he said, I expect to be called Louie. And he said, that's what I want you to call me. And I said, you got a deal, Louie. Here's my point. And by the way, I also thought about Barbara Boxer going bananas, if you guys remember this, a couple of years ago, because a member of the U.S. military testifying at a hearing called her ma'am, and she went nuts and said, I'm a senator, and I worked hard to be a senator. Yeah, gathering up all those political campaign contributions, it's hard work, I guess. We're not talking about a rocket scientist or a pediatric neurologist who saved lives. Give me a break. And she went berserk because she was called ma'am and not senator. You know, it's time, I think, that we strip these political yo-yos of that nonsense, of that mantle that they wear so proudly. I think the time has come for us to call our elected representatives by their first name, period. Not Mr. Governor, not Mr. Mayor, by their first name. Remind them that they work for us, we the people. I was speaking with an attorney, a law professor, actually. I'm going to leave his name out of it, but I'm working with him on a project right now. But we got into this conversation. He agreed with my approach, by the way. And he said, did you hear the story about John Kerry? Now, I don't know if that's accurate. I'm taking his word for it because I trust this guy implicitly. But apparently John Kerry pushed his way into the middle of a line by a theater, and there was a long line of people waiting to get in. And Kerry just came along and somewhere in the middle of the line just inserted himself into the line. And the guy that was there said to him, the line, and you know, the end of the line is way down there, pal. And Kerry said, do you know who I am? And the guy said, yeah, I know who you are. You're Senator John Kerry. And Kerry said, so? He said, so? He said, you work for me. You're my employee. Now get the hell off my line. And I thought it was a great story. You know, far too long, we've been pushed around by people that we elect to represent us, and they certainly don't represent us. They betray us. I think perhaps this is the time that we should take back a little bit of territory and take those people off their high horses and take those people off their pedestals and bring them back to Earth. It's time for reentry. You know, after a space mission, you have to reenter. Get these guys to reenter and realize that they're our employees. It starts by calling them by their first name. We don't have to be nasty. You may have the urge to use a different name to call them by, but just imagine mayors and governors being referred to purely by their name. Wouldn't that make an interesting statement about where they belong in the realm of the universe, to give a sense of reality to their world, because they don't live in the real world. They live in fantasy land. You know, I remember when the executives from the auto industry went to Washington when GM had to be bailed out. And Nancy Pelosi was going bananas, charging at them verbally over the fact that they had flown to Washington in their private jet planes. And they were wusses. I mean, the corporate world, we have a lot of girly men running around, to borrow Arnold Schwarzenegger's term. Girly men, not real men. They weren't like my dad, I can tell you. My dad was a tradesman. He was a construction worker. And you didn't want to be on the wrong end of a discussion if you really got him angry enough. And so she verbally abused these guys, and they looked like a bunch of schoolboys that had been brought to the principal's office for failing to do their homework. And Pelosi just beat the snot out of them verbally. And I remembered watching it, and I remembered thinking that if I was one of those executives, I would have reacted very differently. And this was right after Nancy got her government airplane, if you remember that fiasco. And I would have said to her, Miss Pelosi, we all know that a corporate jet is actually a productivity tool. Anybody who's ever been stuck in an airport waiting for a flight knows how much time gets wasted if a plane is late and so forth. By having your own airplane, you don't go through that nonsense. You tell your pilot, the plane is rolled out, you get on the airplane, you can work while you're in the air, it's quiet, it's private, you have the opportunities to do whatever you got to do to continue doing your work on behalf of the stockholders of the company, and then you get to your destination refreshed, and you're ready to hit the ground running. Very different experience from being shoved into a cattle car with all those other people and where you can't really be productive, and maybe you just killed 3 hours at the airport waiting for the plane to arrive. And by the way, Miss Pelosi, and most men probably would have a problem admitting this to you, but I'm willing to admit it to you. Where airplanes are concerned, yours most definitely is bigger than mine. Could you imagine the headlines that would have generated? I am tired of arrogant politicians. When we have true leaders, I am in awe of their ability and their dedication and their talent. But most of the people we deal with today are nothing more than political hacks and shills for the lobbyists who fill their campaign coffers. And I think a good start to taking these folks down a couple of pegs, and they sorely, sorely, sorely need it, is to start a campaign of simply addressing them by their first name. Wherever they go, whenever they go, to simply call them by their name and remind them, hey, you're our employee. You work for us. You work for us. And if you fail to do what's in our best interest, then you're guilty of insubordination. I mean, maybe we should be having recall votes more frequently. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. But I think it would be a good start to stop holding these people in such high esteem when most of them don't deserve it. You can reach me at michaelcutler.net. I'd certainly be curious to hear your thoughts, but I think something has to be done to change the equation. You know, when I could hear Jeb Bush saying that it's an act of love to allow illegal aliens into our country when Americans are starving, when Americans' minority communities are getting hammered the worst, that's not an act of love. We got to call these politicians on this stuff. If the politicians had paid attention to the attacks of 93, 9/11 couldn't have happened. And nobody pays a price except the people who die. The only people who lost their jobs on September 11th, 2001, folks, the only people who lost their jobs were the people who died. That's not acceptable. That is certainly not acceptable. We have a woman who wants to be attorney general, and we all have to accept the reality that she was carefully interviewed, I am sure, if not by Mr. Obama, then by the people high up in that administration, to make certain that she was willing to go along to get along. The next election can't come soon enough. I think you agree. Anyway, I want to thank all of you for joining me this evening on the Michael Cutler Hour. I look forward to getting together with you again next week, same time, same place. And I want to remind you, as I always do, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. Really and truly, I want you involved. We need to make those politicians understand that we're not as stupid as that they hope we are. And we can do that by writing letters, by trying to schedule meetings. And remember, when you hear that Congress isn't in recess, you'll never hear this on the major networks, and they say, oh, those lazy bums have gone home for vacation. Hopefully they've gone home to meet with their constituents. Make sure they meet with you. Look forward to seeing you again next week, folks. Once again, democracy, not a spectator sport. Have a great weekend, everybody. So long.